Hey, before we jump into the show, I wanted to give you a heads up that my free YouTube strategy class is available right now on demand at thinkmasterclass.com. On the class, I reveal the one YouTube strategy we use at Think Media to generate over 330,000 views every single day. So if you're new to YouTube, this will help you start right and avoid mistakes. And if you're a YouTube pro, this training will help you multiply your growth. This class is 100% free and you can watch it now on demand at thinkmasterclass.com. Now, let's jump into today's show.
If you can own a problem, you can make a lot of money. Talk about their problem 75% of the time and your solution 25% of the time, and your sales will spike.
Once you start having some success on YouTube, or even if you're just starting, how do you build a real business around that success?
Fitness coach, real estate coach, tax strategy coach, on and on and on. If you're good at something, there's somebody else who will pay you to help them do it. It's best to be known for one thing. If you try to be known for two things, my guess is you're going to be about 10% as effective. And there's one question that you want to be able to answer very, 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 very clearly, and it will predict whether or not your business is going to succeed.
Welcome back to the Think Media Podcast. In this episode, we're going to be tackling an issue that 99% of creators struggle with. Once you start having some success on YouTube, or even if you're just starting, how do you build a real business around that success? What are the missing pieces of creator businesses? And what is the six-step formula for growing a six- and seven-figure business around your YouTube channel, or growth hacking your current business with YouTube and media and social media? And my guest today is Donald Miller. Now, he's an American author, public speaker, really someone who's impacted this podcast so much. We talk about Story Brand all the time as one of our favorite books. Today, we're going to be talking about how to grow your small business, a six-step plan to help your business take off. And I think that every YouTube creator and business owner is going to get massive value out of this conversation. Donald, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be with you.
Man, you're really good. That was clear.
Man, I appreciate it. And I've been clarifying my message.
You're doing great.
Man, I'm fired up to have you on the podcast. And we're here. Thanks for hosting us here in Nashville.
Yeah, our pleasure.
First of all, I want to ask you about your experience with a lot of business owners that may feel stressed, discouraged, they're not confident in their plan for growth.
Right.
Paint the big picture, you know, and speak maybe to this. I found that our creators, YouTube creators, are accidental entrepreneurs.
That's true.
They kind of found their, I know that's my story.
Yeah.
I started to be like, maybe I could have a side hustle, start doing some YouTube videos. I'm ranking them in search, doing some affiliate marketing. Then you start thinking, can I productize? And then you're like, oh my gosh, I have all these skill sets that I need.
Right.
You help a lot of people. And so what's the problem that small business owners, or like, I never knew I'd become a small business owner, are experiencing?
The real issue is that nobody starts a business because they want to run a business, right? They start a business because they want to be on YouTube. They want freedom. They want you know, more money for less time. They want some influence. They like their customers. They're fiddling around with a product that they get obsessed about. But nobody says, I really want to read a P&L every month and figure out where the holes in the boat are. You know, nobody does that. And so what happens is all these folks who, you know, didn't get a degree in business, and it almost doesn't matter if you did because it's not going to teach you what you actually need to know in an entrepreneur business. But, you know, they get into it and they realize, oh, I know how to make the product and sell the product. I don't know how to do everything else related to running a business. I don't know how to manage the cash flow. I don't know how to optimize my product offering. I don't know how to establish, you know, guiding principles. I don't know how to hire and fire. I don't know how to run my team using five meetings and keep everything really efficient, keep morale high. And all of a sudden, if your business succeeds, congratulations. The problem is you wake up one morning and you're not doing anything that you used to do when you started the business. You're no longer even making the product. You're spending 10% of your time doing that, 90% of your time in meetings, dealing with drama, you know, that sort of stuff. And so that's where it's called the S-curve. You create a product and you start rising, you start making money, and then you need to hire a virtual assistant, which is a great first step. Then you need to hire a real assistant. Then you need to hire somebody to do your marketing. Then you're climbing. And then you've hired all these people, and suddenly now you're in meetings instead of doing the thing that you were supposed to do. So you start dipping. And now you've got this massive overhead, but sales have slowed down because you are no longer in the sweet spot. You were the key. And now you're not in the pilot seat anymore, so the plane's going down. Then, if you're lucky, you install systems and processes that organize your business in such a way that it can run itself. And the plane starts going back up again. It's called the S-curve because it happens so much in business. It happened to me, and it probably has happened to you. But it's on the way down that everybody's kind of panicking, going, okay, wait a second. How do we actually manage this? You know, when you first start a business, everybody has five hats that they're wearing. Nobody exactly knows what their role is. Everybody's hustling. The owner has to step away because they go speak somewhere. So they're gone for a week. They come back. They discover that everybody's been working on something that they thought they killed, but they didn't tell everybody. They just told this one guy and he forgot to tell everybody else. So now you've wasted a week's worth of labor costs, which is your most expensive cost. That sort of stuff happens all the time. And so what we have to do is we actually have to organize the business and structure it in such a way that it is a machine. And the goal is to be able to walk away from your business for 1 month and not talk to anybody and come back and have it grow. Have it be a little bit better off than it was when you left. If you can accomplish that, you've created a machine that will provide security for you and a lot of other people. But it's a secondary challenge. Starting the business, and then continuing to grow the business beyond you and what private equity calls the owner hustle. And by the way, when they say owner hustle, it's not a compliment. When they see owner hustle, they walk away. They will not buy your business because it's worthless to them. If I buy your business and you leave and it crashes, I'm stuck with a dead business. So they want to make sure that you can leave. It's weird, but I'll pay you an extra 2 or 3 multiple on your business if it doesn't need you. And that's what we're all trying to build, hopefully.
So this is going to be a conversation that I want to unpack. Anybody can apply the 6-step framework, and we'll get there in a second.
Yeah.
But as you're talking about this, I think there's two categories everybody listening is going to fall into. One, that actually YouTube is the business itself. And in saying that, there's no team yet. Maybe there's some good money. Like a couple got into this, and one spouse is kind of managing the logistics and emails, or even the individual might be doing 6 figures or multiple 6 figures, or it's a side hustle. They're making 5K, 10K a year, emailing brands, getting paid. So YouTube is the business itself, or YouTube is doing the ad revenue. The other side, we have real estate agents, service providers, business owners, course creators, authors, speakers that want to leverage YouTube, and they have productized. So pretend I am somebody seeking clarity. What are some questions you would ask me to try to figure out even what business I'm in?
Yeah.
If I'm kind of in this creator world of figuring out how to, because the road to exit when it's a personal brand, especially right, oftentimes, is something that we could reverse engineer from, but that seems way out there. And we're kind of in a place like, I don't even have a product yet. So what are just some maybe foundational questions to get fierce clarity about the business you're in or the business you want to build?
Well, the first thing you want to do is figure out, what is your differentiation? How are you different in the market? And there's one question that you want to be able to answer very, 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 very clearly. And it will predict whether or not your business is going to succeed. That question is, what problem do you solve? That's it. So if I said, Sean, what is the number one problem that you solve out there in the world? And you have a clear answer to that, and people are willing to pay for that solution, your business is going to succeed. Because the only reason people part with their dollars, pull out their wallet and pull out their credit cards, is to solve a problem. And if you don't know what problem you solve, you don't know what you're actually asking people to pay for. It could be, I solve the problem of boredom. People are just bored, and so I entertain them online, and I'm really good at making them pay attention and not get off, right? Not get off the video or click onto something else. Well, you're an entertainer at that point, so you solve boredom, something like that. If you're a therapist, you might solve a number of issues. If you're a real estate agent, you solve the desire to be in a dream home, but you're not sure how to do it or whether you can afford it. You solve that problem for people. Once you understand what problem you actually solve, and you've sort of A/B tested that in the market and people are responding to that, once you figure out what problem you solve, what happens is then you can begin to create the first product, the second product, and the third product that helps people solve that problem. You also create a brand. The most important thing for you to create a personal brand or a brand period is to own a problem. And that is, you know, if you can own a problem that people have, you're going to succeed. And it's also a great differentiator because you say, well, Don, you know, these five competitors, they all solve the same problem I do. And my first question to you is, I'm glad they all serve, you know, solve the same problem. Are they saying it? Because if they're not saying it, it's blue ocean.
Mm.
Because in the perception of the masses, they may solve that problem. But if you come in and you say, if you have this problem, come to me, you're going to own it. And you're going to put all five of them out of business. You know, for instance, I did some consulting recently with Dream Bone Dog Bones, $100 million a year.
Wow.
In Dream Bones. And they were kind of playing around with the controlling idea. Controlling idea is another way to say the problem you solve. And the controlling idea was better than rawhide. More healthy than rawhide. Not once in my 2 decades now of dog ownership have ever woken up and went, oh, I got to do something that's more healthy than rawhide. Mm. It's not a problem that I have. Now, you can slightly agitate it when I think, oh, am I giving my dog something that's unhealthy and this is more healthy? But it's not a felt need. So what I told them was, look, the only reason I ever buy a bone for my dog is to distract that dog, right? I need to throw it in the bedroom, close the door, and have the dog be fine for 30 minutes while, you know, we're having a cocktail party or whatever. If you put on your packaging the best way to distract a dog, you're going to double sales, period. Because everybody goes, oh, I need to distract my dog. I use that. Nobody walks in the store and says, I need something more healthy than rawhide. Oh, here it is. That's never happened in the history of the world.
Yes.
Right? But I need something to distract my dog. I'm looking at 50 different options. They all, by the way, distract a dog. But that package says the best way to distract a dog, which is exactly what I need. Mm. And a lot of people would see that package and they'd go, well, that's actually why I buy a dog bone. I didn't realize that. You need to grab the one. They're going to test that. Another thing that the same company really dominates is the fish aquarium market. And most fish aquariums are bought by hobbyists, you know, grown men who, you know, put a lot of geek time into building an aquarium. They wanted to move into families. And so there's a bunch of people in the room, paid a lot of money. You know, they're paying millions of dollars a year testing this and that. And I just said, put Kids Love Aquariums on the aquarium and put it on the fish food, put on everything, put Kids Love Aquariums on everything. Because you're telling the parent, hey, your kid's going to love this. And so they're going to buy it. And they're like, well, come on, that's pretty, you know, Don. And I'm glad the owner of our company read your book. That's really cute. But, you know, we're paid a lot of money and blah, blah, blah. They A-B tested it in a select market, 100% increase in sales.
Wow.
You have to own a problem. I don't know what to do with my kids as it relates to pets. I'm just looking for something they'll love. Ah, kids love aquariums. Right? And I think we overthink it sometimes. But if you can own a problem, then you can make a lot of money. And every YouTube channel needs to have a controlling idea. And the controlling idea is you come to us if you have this problem and we help you.
Mm.
A couple of mistakes people make. One is they're vague. You know, subscribe to my YouTube channel if you want fulfillment. I don't know what fulfillment means. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Subscribe to my YouTube channel if you want to learn how to make a ton of money in the real estate business. Well, there you go.
Yes.
Right? It's very specific. And so now I know why I know why you are useful to me. You are useful because you help people build YouTube channels. You're probably the king of that. If you don't know how to build a YouTube channel and you want to get into it, there's one person to go to.
Yes.
Right? Now, there may be 50, but they're kind of loosely playing in the space and you're dominating the space.
Yes.
So if anybody has that problem, they come to you. So one thing to learn from that is you weren't vague.
Mm-hmm.
You weren't, media training. Media training is less vague than how to build a YouTube or make a lot of money on YouTube, how to build a YouTube channel. So don't be vague. The other thing is there's some rules on the fact that you can't be known for very many things. It's best to be known for one thing. If you try to be known for two things, my guess is you're going to be about 10% as effective. You're going to be effective, but about 10% is if you can just dominate one space.
10% now overall or 10% in the second thing?
No. I mean, if you split that in two, you're going to have a 90% harder time becoming known at all.
Got it.
Because the human brain does not want to categorize you in two categories, right? I can't think of Sean as the YouTube guy and the excellent home chef.
It just doesn't
really work. So you need to pick one thing and sort of stick with it. And that's the problem. Now,
can I ask you a challenging question on that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what are you known for? I know you for story brand, then you have business and then coach, but you've also had a long career. So can it shift over?
Yes.
I mean, I go back youth ministry days where I got started in video, Blue Light Jazz.
Yeah.
So maybe for someone is like, shoot, I have a couple things, or is there a controlling idea? Because your personal brand, your brand is strong for me, but story brand, I'm looking, I mean, if we get really specific, it's almost 10,000 reviews on Amazon.
Yeah.
It's huge.
Yeah.
That book's a movement. And then I know you business made simple, marketing made simple. So I maybe simplify as you help business owners grow. Mm-hmm. But what, from your standpoint, how are you strategically applying that to yourself?
Well, first of all, when I started as a memoirist, I didn't know any of this,
sure.
Right? So yeah. I'm just sitting around in my underwear writing books, and okay. Thank God one of them actually took off. I'm so grateful for that.
Yeah.
And so I think though that without knowing it, I sort of owned a space, and the space was, you know, as a Christian who grew up in a Southern Baptist, extremely conservative environment, and then went off to audit classes at the most godless campus in the country for 3 years. That conflict was interesting. And so I think without knowing it, I sort of owned this space of this yawning chasm between the way millions of Americans grow up and the world that they live in. And how do you bring these two things together in a way that's congruent? And, you know, I wasn't trying to own that space, but I think I owned it for a minute. That worked so well. That book sold over 1 million copies that
got turned into a movie.
And so that was like 10 years of me continuing to sort of write in that genre. And I think I wrote about 7 more memoirs that were loosely spiritual, theological. Got, you know, warning labels put on my books in Christian bookstores, banned. I mean, I can't tell you how many times some church would call and say, hey, we want you to come speak, you know. And then about 3 weeks later, they would call and say, hey, we're going to have to, you know, say no. We really wanted you. But it was some board member or some deacon just said no go. So there was that was interesting. And I'm the right guy for that to happen to because it never really bothered me.
Yeah.
You know, at the time I was living in Portland, Oregon. There are 7 Christians in Portland, maybe. I think there's an 8th now.
Yeah.
So like, no, it didn't matter.
100%.
Yeah. So, you know, I was out of that culture. And then in order to write better books and also write a screenplay, I'd been studying story and story structure. It was actually Accenture came to me and said, hey, can you make a project management curriculum based on all this stuff you're learning about narrative structures? Because I had a friend who was head of curriculum at Accenture. And I said, man, give it a try. And I tried it. And then I realized, wait, this is much better as a marketing framework. And that was the point at which I said, look, I've written 7 memoirs. Nothing else has happened. I don't want to write another one. I'm not motivated to write another one. I think I'm going to switch careers and I'm going to pivot. So this is a separate conversation, but let me just walk you through it. It takes, in my opinion, 3 years to be known for something else. It is not an easy thing. You have to switch and you have to make a concerted effort. For that, what that meant for me, I'm never speaking at another church again. I'm never writing another spiritual memoir again. I mean, it is whole hog. We're fully committing. And it was 3 years. Thankfully, building a story brand did extremely well. And that doesn't always happen. I had Blue Light Jazz do well. Building a story brand did well. I've written 12 books. 2 of them have done very, very well. But it was it really helped me pivot. And I just became known as the story structure, messaging guy. But that people are like, wow, you know, it's so great. You won the lottery. Yeah, you know, if you consider 3 years worth of buying lottery tickets every day, I won the lottery. Yes,
yeah.
You know, I did. And then, and so that's a strategic run. And that's been going for about 10 years. And I expanded slightly from messaging, corporate messaging, small business messaging to small business frameworks. And now into coaching and how you can do what I did in terms of turn your expertise into a coaching career. So kind of play, I think you can move about an inch. And it won't take 3 years. It might take 1 year. But if you completely turn another direction, just plan on 3 years of really hard work being known as something different, somebody different. And I've done that once, and I will do that again before the end of my career.
And that's an inspiring, I think, that puts handles on it of how hard it is to get known.
Yeah.
You also were all in. And so if someone's dabbling at this and you post a video here and a social message here and it's already confused and you are inconsistent, you're going to prolong your wandering in the wilderness.
3 years goes to 10 years.
Yeah. So, but if you can have fierce clarity And your whole thing of a decade in that first season, that it is possible to pivot.
Yeah, no, it was really nice to have people actually know who I was, and I could actually go to a group of people and say, hey, I'm doing something different. Mm-hmm. And go back to them and say, hey, I'm still doing something different. And then finally, people, you know, when you're driving on a freeway and somebody kind of won't let you over, and you're in the fast lane and you want to pass them, and they sort of honk and all that stuff. Yeah. It's like that in life. And then you get around them and you get into that lane, and then everybody just accepts it. But most people, as soon as somebody honks at them, they go back into the lane they came from. And I'm like, that's a mistake, right? They're not going to want you to change. They're not going to want you to pass them. They're not going to want that. There's going to be some tension there, but sit in that tension and keep going.
Would you like a free copy of the number one best-selling book for growing a successful YouTube channel? If you want to get a copy of the new and expanded second edition of YouTube Secrets, just go to ytsecrets.com. And if you'll cover shipping and handling, I would love to send you this book for free. And the cool thing is, when you place your order, you're also going to get access to some bonus resources like our 1,000 subscribers club, our 7 C's framework, our perfect video recipe framework, as well as some bonus videos that will help you get results on YouTube faster. So to get your copy, just go to ytsecrets.com or click the link in the podcast show notes.
Yeah, so that's incredibly powerful in terms of it's possible to pivot your niche, but you got to know the problem that you're solving.
That's exactly it.
And in YouTube, we're gonna unpack these 6 elements. But in YouTube, a lot of times I would argue the product is the video itself.
Right.
And can you make the product better? Advertisers are paying for that product.
Yeah.
The amount of reach it has is how many ad dollars you get. And ultimately, brands will eventually pay for that product. For a lot of YouTubers, the business that they're in would actually be the advertising business. They're content creators, and either YouTube ads play on it or brands pay on it. Then you might expand that to some kind of a membership, but more like fan funding.
Mm-hmm.
But as we get into these 6 things, before we get there, one of the big messages we have is we want to encourage content creators to productize in some way. Meaning, if you leave it up to advertising dollars, you don't have maximum control, and that you should, especially for like education type channels, it aligns to write a book, create a course, do some kind of mentorship, do some kind of coaching. You certainly could do a physical product. My friend Pat Flynn did what's called the Switch Pod and went through a whole product, nice, high quality, multiple revisions. So different ways of productizing. Before we break this all down, we eventually get to sales. Number 4 is products. We look at the framework. What is your thought there if you were coaching a content creator? Would you say, hey, I think if you only depend on ads, you only depend on fame and views, that you're maybe stopping short? Would you encourage people to productize in the creator economy?
Yeah. I mean, the first thing you want to do is build that platform a little bit. You know, if you can get to 5 or 10,000 subscribers, you can do it before then, obviously. But I think you should focus only on getting eyeballs on those YouTube videos, which, by the way, is also hard. We just started a YouTube channel, and it's been, we work really hard at it, and it's going very, very well, but it is slow. Mm-hmm. So, you got to do that. I think once you do that, and once you own a problem, once you are known as this is who you go to about this. And by the way, that problem can be really niched down, really niched down. Once you own that, the first thing I would actually do is say, by the way, I'm available for a 1-day session. I can spend 1 day with your team if you're struggling with this. And I would charge maybe $10,000 for that. You will be shocked at how many people will hire you. So it is, you don't have any sort of physical assembly. You don't have anybody other than a virtual assistant. You don't have, you're not having to scale up overhead to produce that product, which is 1 day of your time. That's probably the first place that I would go. And along with that, maybe a keynote. I would develop a keynote. So for $5,000, $10,000, $15,000, somebody can bring you in to speak at a workshop or something like that. Again, you're still selling yourself at that point, but you're cheap. Right? There's no assembly line or,
yep,
healthcare or anything like that that you're having to deal with. And I think that's how you sort of get the first extra dollars coming in. And then if you wanted to go beyond that, I would actually sit you down and ask, do you really want to? I mean, if you're making $250,000 a year, you've got great healthcare, you're putting money away, you live in a nice house, you got time with your kids, I would actually sit you down and say, I want you to understand what you're getting into. You go much beyond this and it's going to own you. It's going to own you for a little bit of time. there's going to be a lot of sleepless nights, a lot of people whose life, whose you know, lives are dependent on you in many ways. And they're banking on you. And at that point, you go, okay, do you want to get into that? I say in this book, or actually in a different book, in Coach Builder, I say, you know, how to build a seven-figure coaching business. I spend the first two pages of that chapter trying to talk you out of it.
Mm.
They're saying, don't do it. It's not, there's nothing, there's no part of it that's worth it.
To go from a quarter million, which would be incredible, to a million.
To a million or 10, or even 10 million.
Or 10 million is going to be painful.
It's going to be painful. And so I spend two pages talking you out of it. And then I say, okay, if you're still with me, you're with me for one reason. You have no choice. I personally have no choice. I am wired this way. And I don't care. I'm going for it. And I really like it and it's fun for me. But if you can, if I could press a button right now and not be wired that way, I'd do it. And so, you know, you have to mitigate all of that. But that's the real first question. Do you actually want to do this? Do you actually want more than, you know, it's 2024 right now. $250,000 in 2024. It's right around that number if you're married and have a family. It's a slightly higher number because I'm thinking about marriage and a family. If you make more than that, it does not contribute to your happiness. Anything under $250,000, it does contribute to your happiness, right? But anything above that, no part of it's going to make you happy. There's somebody who said to me once, hey, Don, whatever you own owns you, you know? And so that's the reason we don't have a second home, you know, or an airplane or these ridiculous things that people buy. It owns you.
Yep.
And I don't want that stuff owning me. So, you know, there's a constant give and take here. But I think if you add the sort of, I call it a strategy session, a one-day strategy session. I sell several of them a year. I charge a lot for them. That would be the first thing. The second thing is you on a stage. Now, you on a stage takes you away from home, you know, so you have to calculate what, you know, how many days a year your family's going to be okay with that. You know, just things like that you have to think through. That's the first. You know, after that, there are, you know, there are certifications that you can sell. There are, you can train other people to do what you do. My friend Nicole Burke has a company called Gardenary. She basically just made a kitchen garden. Her friends asked her how to do it. She started going over. She realized my daughter's going to go to college. I need some money. So she started charging money for that. Then she started certifying people to understand how to make a kitchen garden. She's seven figures a year now, you know, just sharing how to put up a kitchen garden. She actually did our garden with my wife, Betsy, and it looks amazing.
Yes.
You know, so there's some models out there on how you do it. And you know probably more than I do about that. But, you know, bigger question is, what can you do? How can you get the most money for the least amount of time and keep your margins?
Yes. Okay. I've been promising everybody we're going to get into these six things, but I do want to kind of put some handles on what we've talked about so far. Certainly, you could be an entertainer and solve boredom. But even our own channel, and I would say a differentiator for us, for our event, there's events that are geared more towards entertainment channels like Vid Summit, our event, Grow With Video Live, and our company would really focus on educators. You're alluding to your book, Coach Builder. You've mentioned that, which we'll certainly put in the show notes as well, your latest book. So excited about that and worth checking out. But this idea of being a coach resonates with a smaller group of people. I'm big, but compared to, you're not going to just entertain, you're going to solve problems for people. You would be somebody who they would want to speak on stage, who could do a strategy workshop, who could teach what you know. And so you would be positioning your YouTube channel and your YouTube business in such a way that it leads towards education, problem solving with this kind of mindset. You mentioned this person. What did she do? She solved
Gardenary. Yeah. Gardenary. Her name is Nicole Burke. On Instagram, she's Gardenary.
Yeah.
And she has a company called Gardenary, and she does, you know, here's how to do a kitchen garden. Here's how to create a kitchen garden. Here's how to eat out of your kitchen garden.
So can you give me like a list of just as many that's come to mind of the types of coaches? It's obviously not going to be an exhaustive list, but when we think about niches, you could be a marketing coach, a business coach, creative or something. What are, you know, when you, and you think about this creator world, this YouTube world, helping people. We're in Nashville. Yeah. One of our students I ran into when I was at Ramsey, who came up, is like, hey, I'm one of your VRA members, which is our YouTube course. He helps people with home studios, how to set up a home studio,
yeah.
And he's productized that. So just off the top of your head, though, when you start thinking about someone's listening to this, maybe they're unsure of where they're going to start, or they're thinking, man, I'm just out here trying to get views and be funny, and I don't even know if I have that, but man, maybe this is a pathway to build a six. I don't know if I want to go to seven figures or eight, but this is a pathway to do that. What are these types of coaching models, coaching businesses?
Well, you know, we've launched a product that helps coaches make at least 100 grand a year.
Okay.
And in order to do that, we have identified verticals in coaching. Our rough draft list on a napkin was 45 different verticals.
Okay.
It's endless. You know, anything that you have an expertise in. For instance, I talked to a guy yesterday. I was in Columbus, Ohio. He was charging $10,000 a person to teach somebody like you how to walk into a company and cut their expenses. So he just has this massive checklist. You want to check their health insurance, see if you can get a better deal. You want to check their shipping, see if you can get a better deal. You want to call FedEx for them. You want to go to their warehouse, see if there's some warehouse space that they could rent out that they're not using. You want to, you know, that's just think about that. Now, if I charge you $10,000 for me to come in and do that, and I guarantee, let's say, a 10x return on your savings.
No brainer.
All day long.
I'd hire him right now.
Yeah, all day long.
And I don't have the time. I'm overwhelmed.
Yeah.
And
it's a win-win. He's just going to give you a list of everything that you need to do. And by the way, I called FedEx for you, saved you 16 grand a year right there. That's coaching. That's a brand right there. And by the way, how many subscribers would you need on YouTube to say for you to make, I don't know, $1 million a year? I think you need like 800 subscribers. I mean, just down just,
with that model.
Yeah.
Compared to make $1 million from YouTube ad revenue, you need 1 million subscribers.
That's exactly.
Well, actually, you need way more than that.
Really, what you need to do is you want to do both.
Yeah.
You want to get the ad revenue, but then you want to say, by the way, I can come in. And that, you know, if you think about that, there's some tips in there on how to really make it work. I'm going to charge you 10 grand, but I guarantee you a 10x return. Mm. We're done. But this guy knows, okay, you got a small business. You're making $100,000 a year. Hey, buddy, I'm sorry. I can't. I'm not going to save you 10x. You know, are you willing to do it anyway or whatever? You're just not making enough money for me to save you money. You know, so you're going to qualify customers at that point. We had my wife at the last minute had a C-section when our baby was born. So a lot of women experience that. You know, they were planning on having a natural birth, but you know the baby's not coming, and we got to do a C-section for reasons the doctor decided. Nobody's health was at risk. We hired a night nurse. I didn't know a night nurse existed. Right. But a night nurse is the woman who's putting the baby down. She's getting her up in the middle of the night, bringing her to my wife because my wife can't really get out of bed for about a week. So we hired a night nurse. We fell in love with it. It was like having Mary Poppins. She was from New Zealand, had a New Zealand accent. You know, she's also, you know, mid-50s going into her 60s and doesn't want to do this anymore. Doesn't want to be up in the middle of the night. You know, her husband is retiring from Southwest Airlines. She wants some free time. The obvious choice. Go into coaching. You actually want to certify people to do what you do because everybody loves you and trusts you so much that if you said, I can't be there, but would you like one of my certified? So you could have a team of 6 or 8 people actually doing this with you. That would be night nurse. We actually came up with a brand Dream Baby, right? So that's the sort of thing that we're thinking of. But fitness coach, real estate coach, tax strategy coach, you know, money and budget coaching, you know, on and on and on. If you're good at something, there's somebody else who will pay you to help them do it.
Brilliant. Okay. So that was the introduction. And obviously, I want to encourage people to get the book for the deep dive on this, but let's hit the 6 critical parts of small business.
Okay.
Number one is leadership.
Yeah.
For the average YouTube creator, I don't think that's the first problem that comes to mind. What do you mean by leadership?
It should be the first problem that comes to mind. Even if you're a solopreneur,
solopreneur,
the only one in the operation,
yes,
you have to lead yourself.
Okay.
You have to know where you're going. And so the way I look at a business, I look at it like an airplane. The leadership is the cockpit. You reverse engineer the coordinates of where you're going. If you don't do that, you don't even have a, it's a non-starter.
Sure.
We have to know this plane is going to Seattle.
Yeah.
Because it's going to Seattle, we now know we need this much fuel. We now know who needs to get on board the plane, right? We need to know the flight attendants who need to be on the plane. We need to know how much food that we should have on the plane. We need to know, is this even the right plane? Can it get to Seattle? Everything is reverse engineered from the coordinates. The problem with most solopreneurs and the reason they, you know, up to 65% of them fail is because the coordinates they entered the computer were too vague. So they said, I want to make a lot of money on YouTube. Too vague. Right? I want to help people understand how to make money in the real estate market. I want to help people understand how to trade stocks who you know, are hobbyists mostly, who want to play with money in the stock market. I want to train them and I'm going to become known. That's a very specific, that's much more specific. If I say, you know, if you're getting on a plane and I'm the pilot and you say, hey, I want to make sure I'm on the right plane. Where's this going? I say east. Are you getting on the plane?
Yeah.
Are you turning around and going,
yeah, that's not good for me.
It's not good for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so we have to be very, 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 now that can, those coordinates can change over time, but I think they always need to be specific. I am going here. One of the main reasons you want to do that is because by creating a very specific defined direction that I'm going, a place that I'm going to, I now have a filter. Anything that doesn't help me get there, I say no to. And that's very, very important. Steve Jobs was famous. The reason he only had a few products was because he couldn't micromanage more than three or four. And he wanted to micromanage the entire organization, right? And everybody hates micromanagers. It actually works. And if you can micromanage yourself, that's great. Bill Walsh, who won, I don't know how many Super Bowls with the San Francisco 49ers. I think he won two or three Super Bowls before the owner came into the building and said, Bill, I'm buying you a new building. We're going to build a $50 million complex and you deserve it. You've won me three Super Bowls. You're in a double wide trailer here. Lowest paid leadership staff in the entire NFL at the time. And he goes, you don't build me a new building. And the owner was like, why not? You won three Super Bowls. Like, I want to pour money in this. He goes, you build me a new building. Make sure the walls are as paper thin as they are in this double wide trailer. Cause I can hear every single phone call that happens. And I want to know everybody on the, he was micromanaging the whole thing.
Wow.
So, you know, you've got, and the reason is if you don't do that, everybody starts going in a bunch of different directions. Now, I'm not a fan of micromanaging. I've got five meetings that our company has. I went to London for a month with my family, came back. The business was stronger, a lot stronger. I was sort of offended by how strong it got. But, you know, you don't want to micromanage everybody. But you definitely want to know what everybody's working on, everybody's doing. That includes, if it's a solopreneurship, yourself. This is what I'm going to do. Sean, almost every morning I get up and I read my purpose statement from the perspective of the end of my life. And it's a bunch of bullet points and it's written in the present tense. I have built a $100 million company. I have done, there's about 12 of them. I spend every weekend with my family. I'm home every day at 5 and I'm completely present. I get up and get my daughter out of bed every morning. You know, those are the things that at the end of my life, I will have done. And what that is doing is every morning is reminding me where this airplane is going. And if you don't enter the right coordinates, you're lost, right? And again, they have to be specific. That's the cockpit. The right engine is your marketing. You need a very clear message. And if I can give you one tip on marketing.
Can we go back to the cockpit?
Yeah, let's go back to the cockpit.
What's the difference between vision and mission?
Well, I think vision is, you know, when you have a picture of it's visual. It's, we have a picture of what life looks like when we get there, right? This is where we're going. I think mission is why it matters. And also, I think mission has to be mutually beneficial. It can't just be for you. It has to be for somebody else. And, you know, for us, we believe that every small business owner deserves the help they need to grow a business. That's our mission. Our vision is we're going to be a $100 million outfit and we're going to serve X number of 25,000 coaches, probably 5,000 StoryBrand certified guys. The numbers are very, very specific. Again, specifics matter. And so I think that's the difference between vision and mission. Vision is I see it. You know, vision is I'm going to be in the greatest shape of my life. I'm going to have six-pack abs. Mission is my kids deserve a dad who lives well into their 40s and 50s.
Yes.
And dances with them at their wedding and holds their children. That's mission. Vision is six-pack.
Yes.
I mean? I think that's the difference.
I love that. And then also under leadership is also core values.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So my question for you, I would say, and I can relate to this myself, I guess the accidental entrepreneurs that start YouTube or the solopreneurs that just start hustling and pressure washing and buying some cleaning supplies and whatnot. Yeah. And all of a sudden now they're like, I need to hire a team. I was just landscaping myself. I could scale this into a whole thing. It seems probably pretty rare if you ask the average business owner, what are your core values? I don't know if they know them. I don't know if they're written down. I was talking to a business owner recently. They never talk about them with their team. They're like, they're in the handbook. I was one's like the last time you brought them up. They're like, they haven't. Especially if we're thinking content creator, yes, you need to lead yourself, but how critical and how soon is the ship sinking if we don't write down our vision, we write down our mission, write down our core values? This is the cockpit. So is this an underestimated thing that people need to get clear and get dialed in to succeed?
Well, the core values, I think, are important. There's two things I think that are actually more important than core values. When you're putting together your package of guiding principles, I would say it's your mission statement, and then it's your key characteristics, then your critical actions, and then your core values.
Mm.
Those four territories, if you will, they need to be defined. Mission statement, I love the formula, we will accomplish X by Y because of Z. X is three economic objectives. You're going to rewind this on YouTube a few times. X is three economic objectives. In other words, we're going to sell this many of that, and this many of that. Only three. The human brain has trouble processing more than three.
Mm.
The Y is a deadline. We're going to sell this many of this, this many of this, this many of this by January 1, 2026. The Z is because. It's what Simon Sinek would call your why. So we're gonna have 2,500 people in our coaching program. We're gonna have 900 people in our Story Brand Certified Guide program. We're gonna have 18,000 people in our online platform by January 1 of 2025 because every small business owner deserves the help they need to grow a small business. That is my mission statement. And you can stop anybody in our hall and say, hey, what are the three economic objectives of this company? And they will tell you very specifically what they actually are. And then the next question you have is, what are you working on to make that happen? And they know we need to be working on things that actually contribute to those economic objectives. So that is an incredibly clarifying statement. A lot of people say that doesn't sound like a mission statement. And I said, well, just call it a goal statement. I don't care what you call it. It will become the defining statement of your organization. Everybody's already forgotten your mission statement. Nobody knows it anyway. So call it a goal statement. The next thing is key characteristics are, what are three characteristics of people who work out here? You know, for us, no drama, right? Balanced. We don't work after five. We don't work on weekends. If the most important meeting of the year is happening and your kid's in a school play, be at the play. Those are our rules.
Yeah.
However, when you show up, we're here to win. We want you extremely competitive, but don't get unhealthy.
Hmm.
Make sense?
Yes.
And if you can combine those two things, you work out here. You know, if you can't and you're here all the time, you're making tons of money and I'm here and your wife, she doesn't like me very much because I'm a slave owner and I'm like, yeah. You're not working out.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, you want to define what sort of people work out here. And the way you do that is you look around at your team and you say, you know, that guy, but why does that guy work? Why do I love that guy so much?
Mm.
And start listing out his characteristics and then try to duplicate them in your hiring process. So key characteristics. Critical actions are three things that almost everybody in the organization can do in order to make this work. So if you run a restaurant, clean restrooms. Every hour we clean the restaurant. Bucky's, the truck stop, is making money hand over fist because they tripled the size of the restrooms and they keep them clean. That's basically it,
wow.
Right? And it's just like, that is a critical action. You go to Chick-fil-A, everybody says, my pleasure. It's a sort of Southern hospitality ethos that happens because of that critical action. And then finally, underneath that, I think you define some core values. The reason I don't like core values is they're always so vague. They can't be metaphorically defended in court. And what I mean by that is one of our core values is integrity. You know,
whose isn't, or what does that even
that's
mean?
That's right. Based on whose perception of the word integrity. Like there are a lot of people in prison who have integrity. You know what I mean? So no, I mean, I like rules like we don't kill people.
Yeah.
I like that a lot better. Right?
Yeah.
Or, you know, we never lie to a customer. You know, things that are just very, very easy to determine whether or not you did it. If we say one of our critical actions is we're just on time. Or we return every phone call within 15 minutes. That's a critical action that you can actually not defend in court if you didn't do it.
Yeah.
The jury's going to go, well, you took 18 minutes. Instead of like, well, he does have integrity.
Yeah.
It's too hard to figure that out. So that's why I love core values. Don't get me wrong. They're just hard to measure. And so key characteristics, critical action, and that formula for a mission statement, those are the coordinates you put in the cockpit of the airplane to make sure the airplane's going to the right place.
Got it. So we probably can't go this deep on each of these, but again, in the book, you can go step by step through all of the above. And I want to implore listeners, man, it's just going to help so much when you put this level of thinking and strategy and forethought and reverse engineering back into what is it you're building on YouTube? What problem are you solving? But the right engine is marketing. Give us kind of the 30,000 foot level on that.
Well, I wrote a book called Building a Story Brand that is summarized in How to Grow Your Small Business. But the idea is to invite customers into a story. But let me just give you one tip on marketing, and I've already given it to you. Own a problem. I really believe if you understand your customer's problem, once you understand it, you've A/B tested it, customers are clearly responding to it, talk about their problem 75% of the time and your solution 25% of the time, and your sales will spike. The problem is the trigger that makes people want to buy something, right? And the only reason human beings spend money is to solve a problem. That's it. And if they don't know what problem you solve, they don't know why to give you money. Now, there are some other things that you can do, but that's the big one. That's the big one. That's the right engine. The left engine of the airplane is, and by the way, without the engines, you can't get that thing moving forward. So you got to market yourself. And the best way to market yourself is to own a problem and repeat it over and over. You know, good marketing is an exercise in memorization. What I mean by that is you are taking your customers through an exercise in memorization. You are trying to get them to memorize that you're the person to go to if they want to make money on YouTube. Mm. And once you own that mental real estate, you're golden.
Yes.
Right? But it takes repetition of the same words over and over and over to get people to memorize something. We have an 11-year-old in our house, and she gets paid to memorize poems. That's, in fact, she also babysits a little bit, but she gets paid two ways. She babysits and she memorizes poetry. Right now, she's working on William Blake's Tiger, Tiger in the Night, right? And, you know, every other night, she'll just stand in the kitchen. I'm going, okay, how far are you? And she'll go through the whole thing. By the way, if you've not heard an 11-year-old recite William Blake, it's good for your heart.
Yeah.
So, you know, she makes money that way. But how do you memorize something? You say the same words over and over and over and over. Now, if I'm trying to get you to memorize something, I have to say the same words over and over. It's very important, even on your YouTube channel, to say, you know, let's say you make money helping people in real estate. You want to open every video. A lot of you are wondering how you can make so much money in real estate. You have friends making a ton of money in real estate, but you don't know how. Well, you're on the right place. So, and then end the thing by saying, don't forget, this is where you come. If you want to make money in real estate, I'm the guy who teaches you. You have to actually say it over and over. You can't just go, well, let's help people make money in real estate. And then they will realize that they won't realize that's what they do. They'll go, well, that's a good tip. But they won't go, oh, that's the guy you go to when. Make sense? So that's marketing. Sales, a lot of things on sales too. There's a formula in the book. I teach you to write an email that will close the deal. Hmm. I was in Las Vegas. I should have come and seen you, Sean. I didn't know you were there. This was a year and a half ago. 250 sales executives in a room. They asked me to come in and do a talk about sales. And so I walked on stage. I said, hey, you know, 250 sales executives in the room, all with one company. It's a growing company. You've heard 1,000 guys talk about sales. I'm not going to talk about sales. Open up your laptop. We're gonna send an email. We're going to make money right now.
Mm.
Everybody's opened up their laptop. I'm like, who's the last person you talked to? They're sitting the fence. All right, let's send them an email. I want you to start with a problem. What problem did they have? Now position your product as a solution to that problem. Give them a three-step plan from their problem to your solution. Point out the negative stakes if they don't buy it. Point out the positive stakes if they don't buy it. And then ask for the money. Now hit send. Took about an hour. $2.5 million were closed in the room with the emails that went out that day.
Wow.
Right? I should have charged more for my...
Yeah, no doubt.
But, the book teaches you how to do that. Now you got both your engines. They're firing. Your wings are the products that you sell. And this is big for a solopreneur YouTube. You need to get a few products. I like that strategy session. I like you as a keynote speaker. That's stuff that I can go and do, and there's not a lot of overhead in it. You got to manage work-life balance when you're doing that. Then maybe I'm going to, you know, one of the things that I did was there was such a demand for me to come in and do story brand workshops that there was a guy named JJ Peterson who was subbing for me in one part of the workshop. He would take an hour of a 16-hour workshop so I could go sit in the green room and just catch my breath. And people were saying, Don, can you come in and do this for just our company? You know, we were only doing public workshops. I did that a few times. Now I'm on airplanes too much. And so I said, JJ, you think they would bring you in? Like, do you think I'm necessary? And JJ said, man, we could try it. And I said, well, listen, I'll give you a small base salary if you want to come on board. And he said, and then a percentage of, and if we get 8 of those, you'll make a great salary this year. Are you willing to try? I'm willing to try. He flew back to LA, got in his car, drove to Nashville. By the time he got to Nashville, we'd booked 20. Mm. Right? So now I've got a guy, I'm being duplicated. Now, really important thing for all of your YouTube thought leaders to understand, the only way you duplicate yourself is actually own a framework. So it's Don Miller's StoryBrand 7-part framework. It's not Don Miller. And so if it's Don Miller's 7-part StoryBrand framework, Jane can go in and teach Don Miller's StoryBrand 7-part framework. And right now, I mean, we have three facilitators on the road pretty consistently, plus JJ, so four. Dr. JJ, he got his PhD in StoryBrand.
Wow.
He's the world's leading academic on StoryBrand. He teaches a StoryBrand course at Vanderbilt that I don't get to go and teach because I'm not the world's leading academic. I'm trying not to be bitter about these things. But, you know, that's the framework actually spreads, and also the rights to that framework, which we have protected legally, will go to my daughter. So she will someday own the StoryBrand 7-part framework and can do with it what she wants. She can license it to people to use it, even if she never wants to do that. So make sure you don't just scale yourself, create something that other people can use. And that's often frameworks or a process or a formula or something like that.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And that we talk a lot about your proprietary process.
Right.
Having a framework that also might be the thing you outline in your book. You could go deeper in consulting. You could also maybe put it into a course, into a workshop, into one day or multi-day event. And we have a framework. We have a 7R YouTube framework. And that is something that we are now scaling with coaches.
Yeah.
We've got 7 Think Media certified coaches. And so that's now products. And we could plug in these pieces. We're going through this 6 things. The point, you're going to need them all because we need a plane that actually not only knows where it's going, but has the engines to take off, the wings, so that there is that liftoff. And we still have a couple more to carry. So to cover, the next one is overhead and operations.
Overhead and operations is basically labor management. So when you're a solopreneur, you're in a single prop engine airplane flying by yourself. You know what I mean? And those are fun times.
You can't take a nap either.
You can't take a nap.
Yeah,
so you can't leave. Yeah. But you got one engine. That's usually your marketing engine. You're doing some form of marketing. You're talking about something on YouTube, that sort of thing. Very quickly, if you do it well, that stuff begins to scale. And, you know, you're going to want I strongly recommend a virtual assistant as fast as you can. The reason I like virtual assistants, you can start them at 10 hours a week. And, you know, I started mine at 10 hours a week and we got to 40 very quickly. And then I bought her. I actually went to the place that the firm and said, I paid the fee, the penalty fee, and we brought her in house. You know, so I need that really quick. And then you start finding other people. You know, it's great to bring on somebody, a sales rep, marketing executive, project managers. You know, it grows without you knowing. And suddenly you look around, you got 25 seats in the back of this airplane. Mm-hmm. Those are very expensive. Labor is always your biggest cost. And so what you want to be able to do is keep labor down. There's two ways to do that. One is you can not pay people very much. And a lot of business owners have this strategy. Another thing is you can actually increase production based on the number of people so that they more than cover themselves. And then you can pay them very healthily, which is our model. But what you want to be able to do is say, okay, if I pay this person $75,000 a year, this is the golden question. How are they making the company 750? If they can make the company 10X. The reason you're going to do 10X is it's probably not going to work out that great. So it's going to be 7X. You're going to give half of that to the government. Then you're going to pay their health care if you have really great health care, and we do that here. They've got vacations, all that kind of stuff. And so basically what it ends up with is I'm going to pay this person $75,000, and if you get to a 10X strategy, they're going to pay you back about $75,000. It's actually going to be 1-for-1 at the end of the day. But you've got to shoot for 10X even to get to 1-to-1. And then you got to pray that the market doesn't collapse and the inflation doesn't kill you. You know, it's a game.
Yeah.
So, you know, people say that, well, you're making 10 times as much money as you're paying. No. Not at all. Right. So, you know, what you have to do is get great production out of the belly of that airplane. Everybody in that seat has to have a reason, a purpose. There has to be a business strategy on why you hired them. And for the first probably 5 or 6 hires, they all need to be directly related to revenue. You know, sales, marketing, the stuff that makes money.
Yep.
The reason that an administrative person will make $40,000 a year and a sales executive will make $200,000 a year is there's not a lot of money in the administrative role and there's a ton of money in the sales role. Is that fair? Well, it depends. I mean, if you don't want the pressure of being a sales executive, which, by the way, they last about 3 years before they're burned out, and you want great work-life balance, you can't buy that. That's pretty awesome, but you're not going to get paid super, super well for that. So, you know, you have to be kind of be honest about that stuff with folks. But you know, that's how we view it around here. And we have very honest conversations about, listen, the reason this doesn't pay very much is it's not directly related to revenue. So, you know, you got to kind of figure that stuff out. But the key is, if you walk out onto a tarmac to get on an airplane and the belly of that airplane is massive and it's got two little stubby wings and some rubber band propellers and smoke is coming out the back of one of them, gas is pouring onto the tarmac. Are you getting on that airplane?
No way.
No. So if I walk into your office and I know you guys have about 2% profit margins, you got really expensive furniture and kegs and ping pong tables, I'm not investing in this company.
Yeah.
You have clearly put money into the belly of the airplane rather than money into the engines and the wings of the airplane, which is where all your money should go.
And the final one is cash flow. So what is practical there?
Yeah, don't run out of money. And keep very good optics. So there's a way in the book that I teach you to run your cash flow with 5 checking accounts.
Okay.
I won't get into it right now, but basically here's some rules. One is put yourself on a salary immediately. So if you're making $200,000 top line revenue, put yourself on a $75,000 salary. So Don, that's not enough. Well, you're going to have to go get a side gig. You're going to pay yourself $75,000 a year. Every 2 weeks, however much money that is going to come out of your account, and it's going to go from the operating expense account to your personal checking account. That's the money that you get to live on. Then you let the company make a ton of money. Any excess money that it makes goes into business savings. That's your security net. Once you have 6x 1 month operating expense in your business savings, it overflows into another account called investment holding. Now, you're paid two ways. You're paid on your personal checking and you're paid on investment holding. And those are your two personal accounts. But the reason you don't just take money off the top all the time is you can't budget that. You can't predict it. You can't create a system on it. And the other reason I call it investment holding is I strongly suggest taking that money and investing it rather than spending it. And then now I've got two businesses. I've got the business that's fueling and filling up my investment holding account. And then I'm using investment holding to buy SEP IRAs and CDs and real estate and products that make me money without having to work. And that's the trick that the wealthy know.
That's very powerful too, because creators might have accidental entrepreneurs, sometimes very successful, lots of money. And we're seeing all ages, but a younger generation blowing up on YouTube. Mm-hmm. But then just being like, look at all this money. It might sometimes the athlete mentality.
Yep.
And, oh, I got all this money, but they're not thinking about keeping expenses low, paying themselves first, setting these things up, and things can get out of control really fast.
Yeah, and let me just say something to them really quick, because this is a lifesaver. I love that you're going to drive a Rolls Royce and wear a $500,000 watch. I love it. But here's how I want you to spend that money. Take the money that you make, put it into investments, and the interest on those investments are the money that you get to spend on the Rolls Royce and the watch. And the reason is, every year, that investment is going to pay you that amount of money. And so every year you get a new Rolls Royce. Every year you get a new watch. But live like a miser until your investments, your second business. The reason that you're on YouTube to make money is to buy investments that make you money. That's it. If you asked Ray Kroc when he was alive, why does McDonald's exist? What do you own? What do you sell? He's going to tell you, not hamburgers. He's going to say real estate. We're a real estate company. What we do is we put a hamburger spot on very, very valuable real estate and sell burgers to buy the spot. It's a trick.
Yeah.
But we're a real estate company. You are an investment holding company. The reason you're on YouTube is so that advertisers and YouTube will pay you so that you can go buy stocks, CDs. Learn all, it's super easy. You can learn this stuff on Instagram for great. You learn it on YouTube for great.
Yeah.
So just learn, okay, these are the three things that my family buys. And then the key number is extremely conservative. Every $1 million you put away makes you 50 grand a year forever more, right? So $10 million means you're making $500,000 a year doing nothing. Mm-hmm. And once you hear that number, you go, oh, or you buy a boat and you never make $500,000 a year off that money because you have a $10 million boat that, by the way, worth $8 million as soon as you sailed it off the dock. It's stupid. It's just, you know, rich dad, poor dad stuff.
Yes.
But think of your business as something that exists to buy you products, financial products, real estate, assets that actually make you money. And then live off the assets.
And this is your path. It will lead to peace,
yes,
sustainability, legacy, building a real business, getting these pieces in place, getting IP productized and protected legally that could be passed on to your daughter.
Yep.
And really thinking about for in the creator or the business owner that wants to leverage YouTube and social media to grow. I mean, it's what the book is titled, How to Grow a Small Business.
Yeah, yeah.
And 100% of people listening to this need to apply this. So I want you to shout out all the latest stuff, but I would encourage our listeners, you've got to pick this book up. I mean, I think by now you might be like, okay, one, I'm overwhelmed a little bit because I realize there's a few, yeah. there's a lot I got to work on.
Yeah.
But two, it's you know, we're getting 1% better with every upload, getting 1% better every day in our businesses. And so this is an incredible resource. So we'll link that up. What else can people check out as far as what you're doing? There's the new Coach Builder YouTube channel.
Yeah, Coach Builder comes out March 12th of 2024. As you and I talk, it will be done by the time that people hear this. So the book is out. That book, I wrote that book because I've talked to so many coaches who say, Don, I love coaching. I have great value to offer. I don't know how to get a client. I don't know how to get a high paying client. And so I sat down just to write a PDF on here's how to build a six-figure, seven-figure coaching business. And I thought that PDF's going to be 4 pages. 250 pages later, I realized, okay, we got to publish this as a book. So Coach Builder's out. Takes you through 8 steps. The first step is to create a menu of products. And then you start marketing based on that. How to get your website right, how to use a CRM to grow your coaching business. If you have an expertise in anything at all and you think you might be able to charge for it, Coach Builder is the book that you want to buy because it teaches anybody with an expertise, whether it's nursing a baby, fitness training, real estate development, whatever you can teach, you can make a lot of money. In fact, I just emailed a gentleman this morning who's working on a book. He's a headhunter. So he spent his entire life, he makes great money finding multi-million-dollar executives and getting them a job at executive. He's writing a book about what he's learned about who works out and who doesn't. You think that's valuable? It's incredibly valuable.
Priceless.
Right? Yeah, anybody, and I recommended the title, Top Job is the name of the how do you get it?
Yeah.
How do you get the top job? Well, he probably thought his expertise was actually headhunting and job placement. But there's a much more valuable expertise in that you actually know what that woman needs to do to get that job because you've seen it happen a million times. And now you can charge $50,000 a year to that person to coach them to get that job over the next 4 or 5 years.
Wow.
Or at least have a high percentage chance of doing so.
Yeah.
Right? So once you figure out what your valuable problem is, you got a business.
Does the book also, if you don't have that clarity yet, will help you get clarity, or is that going to be a story
yes.
brand?
Yes. I don't know. I teach you to figure out what the problem is and own it.
Yeah.
And Coach Builder is the book for that.
Okay.
If you have a staff of 5 or 10, grab How to Grow Your Small Business. This is basically everything they did not teach you in college.
Yep.
And it's a lot cheaper. It's $20. Maybe Joe Biden will someday forgive the $20 and you can get your money for your education back.
Come
but
on.
I don't think you're going to need it.
Yes.
I think it's better than a college education. That was the goal, was to write a book that actually in the real world, not ivory tower stuff, taught you how to run a business. If you want to grow if you are a thought leader and you've got some expertise and you want to grow specifically a coaching and consulting business, the book is Coach Builder.
Well, thank you so much for adding massive value today. And I just want to say myself, our team, appreciate you, your company, just the works you've been putting out into the world. Everything that you publish is so valuable. It brings so many insights. It's helped our company Think Media grow. So excited about Coach Builder, excited about this book. And you added massive value. This is one of those episodes to share. There's definitely someone in your life that could benefit from this. And Think Media Podcast, like, rate, review, wherever you listen or watch. My name is Sean Cannell, your guide to building a profitable YouTube channel. And I can't wait to connect with you in a future episode.